Let's go ahead and go over the answers to these problems, which, by the way, the set of problems was one of two problems on quiz number two of last year. So these are problems that perfectly well could show up on the exam, in other words. Let's take them in order. The first one we had was cyclopentanone. Reacting first with a compound which is called morpholine. Which, as an aside, got a very excited email from someone yesterday that said, you know, I actually read the darn book, Dr. Gray, and that name of that other compound you used the other day was pyrrolidine, which actually I recognized the name as soon as I saw it, so hopefully I will remember this from now on. But that thing that is not pyrrol, the saturated version, is pyrrolidine. So back to the problem we're currently working. We have morpholine reacting with cyclopentanone and sulfuric acid. That's followed up by ethanol, which is followed up by sulfuric acid heat and water. What reaction is this? The stork enamine synthesis. And I know that up until this point, there haven't been that many reactions you've been required to know the name of. And we have the Grignard reaction, the Wittig reaction, a couple of reactions that have names. It's not uncommon to have what are called name reactions, reactions whose only way that chemists normally communicate them are by name alone. That actually gets very annoying sometimes because you might happen to know a reaction, but don't happen to know its name that it's referred to, something I used to run into a lot when I was in graduate school. But in this alpha chapter, those reactions we're learning, they're such common reactions, that's the only way they normally are referred to as, except by a general term of enolate reaction. So you do need to know the Claisen versus Aldol versus Michael. Those, for one section only, we do need to know those names. And this one is the stork enamine synthesis. Condensation means to take two molecules and combine them together. So first step here, you've seen the mechanism before. Just recently, I think we reviewed imines versus enamines. So since this is a secondary amine when it combines with the cyclopentanone, we'll get a carbon-carbon double bond. So in other words, we will end up with an enamine. This then can react in an alpha-style reaction. In this case, the next portion of this is going to be like an aldol reaction. So remember that the lone pair on nitrogen is providing the electron density to that carbon-carbon double bond for it to be able to open up and attack something. That's going to put a positive charge on the nitrogen, which we'll take care of in a moment, because we also end up with a negative charge on the oxygen. Some kind of solvent, we would imagine, is there. I'll keep it generalized, because all we care is that at this point... Oh, I don't need a hydrogen there, no. Because it attacked the carbonyl, so this is the methyl group that's left over. I almost made that mistake. What he was pointing out to is like, wait, you forgot your hydrogen right here, Dr. Green, but no, because I'm attacking the carbonyl, so yes, there's the hydrogen, but that is the same position of the carbonyl, so the hydrogen's here.
this is the methyl group that goes over there.
Some kind of solvent we have around where we can allow that enolate to become protonated. We still have this positively charged nitrogen, though. Well, if you take a look at that, that's the same type of intermediate you get when you're trying to form the enamine. So the same thing can happen to relieve that positive charge, where alpha to the carbon-nitrogen double bond, we have some random kind of base pulling off that hydrogen. Which will help us recover the neutral enamine. We then have acidic aqueous conditions, which that's going to cause the enamine to decompose, and this is just a couple of cycles of protonate, open attack, deprotonate. So it's the alkene that gets protonated first. We generate a carbocation next to the nitrogen. We're doing hydrolysis. There's water around, and that's what can attack the carbocation. And then we'll have a deprotonation, make neutral oxygen. We're halfway through it. We're at the carbonylamine. One more round of protonate, open attack, deprotonate. It'll be the nitrogen that gets protonated first. Which gets us an ammonium ion. Which can then leave which leaves behind a carbocation right next to an OH group, which means at this point we can have resonance. And then the carbonyl can become deprotonated. Now, with the set of reagents I gave you, it might be reasonable to stop at this point. However, if you have heat, then after the hydration, if you then switch to where you're again removing water, we're going to be able to dehydrate this compound. Because since this is similar to the product of an aldol condensation, where we get this beta hydroxy group, if you then cook up the group in acid and again allow water to be removed, we're going to dehydrate just like we've seen before with the aldol reaction. Alcohol gets protonated. Water leaves as a leaving group. And then the water that just came off can attack a hydrogen to cause the elimination, cause the overall dehydration. So somewhat lengthy mechanism, but that's because there's several parts to this. We make the enamine first, which that part I didn't even show you. We then do whatever alpha reaction the enamine's going to do, which that wasn't too long of a part of the mechanism. But then if I ask you to hydrolyze it, ask you to show the hydrolysis, then that's a somewhat longer mechanism. Am I likely to ask for it? I don't know. It's kind of long. There might be other mechanisms I'd more badly want to see. There is also the fact that this is really a 12B mechanism, even though we didn't do a heck of a lot with enamines. But at the very least, you really do need to know what is formed after each set of reagent. You must at least understand it synthetically. And if I've taken the time to write the mechanism out, maybe somehow, somewhere, part of it at least, will show up. Questions on the first problem? Then let's move on to the second one. Wait, let me make sure I did. Yes, the same one. We have an ester. For the first reagent, the only thing I show is LDA, and then sulfuric acid. Now, comment about esters and LDA. You might remember I did make some mention about order of addition, the fact that if we add all the esters slowly to a container of LDA, we're going to make the enolate. But nothing else is going to happen because we're trying to prevent any ester buildup. If we add LDA instead to the ester, you get a little bit of enate, but a lot less of ester left over, and so you get a condensation reaction. To know which case is going on, you have to be able to recognize what set of reagents we're using. So notice that LDA is the only, quote-unquote, useful reagent that's being used in this case. Otherwise, all you're then using is sulfuric acid, which really is just used to neutralize or give you, to protonate whatever groups might have been formed. So the fact we have no other substrates, no alkyl halides or anything like that, that's going to be the clue that this is what kind of reaction. Which kind of reaction is this? But what kind? The name for the ester one is Claisen. Claisen condensation is what we get when we only have LDA and if we added LDA to the solution. And then acid is just to work up the reaction afterwards. So let's see what the mechanism is going to look like. We only have one place for alpha protons, so that's where the alpha proton is going to get removed. I'll go ahead and show resonance to highlight the fact that we're making a enolate. And notice that I'm using a forward arrow because LDA is a much stronger base than the enolate we make. So there's the enolate. And again, if we're only seeing LDA as a reagent, we're going to presume that LDA is being added to the ester so that we can have some form of further reaction. So the enolate will reform its carbonyl. Carbon-carbon double bond will reach out to attack another carbonyl. So the carbon that got attacked is going to have a negatively charged oxygen on it. We have the alkyl group that was originally on it. And then we have the alkoxide, kind of a strange looking molecule. That carbonyl will reform, and it can kick off the alkoxide. Which means we get our beta carbonyl compound. And now, looking at it, I can't figure out why I had just strong acid there. If I put an acid and water, one could say, oh, he's looking to see if we'll hydrolyze it, turn it back into a carboxylic acid. It's not really my intention, I guess, just on autopilot. When I wrote the quiz, I said LDA. Oh, LDA needs an acid workup. Not in this case. So I'm going to go back and scratch out the acid and just have LDA. Now it really is more obvious, or should be more obvious, it's just a Claisen condensation. Questions on number two? Number three, I don't think I'll write a mechanism for, because we've already seen one that was so incredibly similar. A reaction that was similar to this. Which reaction is this? Oh, now let's see. Let's look at the base we had. Sodium methoxide. The suggestion was just made that we're going to have trans esterification. Well, yes, the carbonyl can be attacked, but you're not actually going to get any change in the product if the carbonyl gets attacked. So yes, trans esterification in the sense that the ester can be attacked is going to occur, but we're not actually going to change the product. If I'm implying an alpha reaction occurs here, is this really the best base for us to use? Some people are kind of shaking their head, no, why not? But is it going to be changed? Ooh, okay. So first, back to the transesterification issue. If I have a methyl ester and I attack it with methoxide, methoxide plus methyl ester equals methyl ester. Nothing's going to change. So in terms of compatibility, this is perfectly fine. There is the question of acidity. Because the alcohol, if we made the conjugate, has a pKa of about 16. This, even though it's got two carbonyls, the two carbonyls are separated from each other. And so each alpha proton has a pKa of 24, or your textbook says 25. So the methoxide is not really a strong enough base to force this to deprotonate. But if you left this in solution for long enough and just heated it up, Again, the worst thing that's going to happen between the ester and this methoxide is for methoxide to replace methoxide, which means nothing happens. But if somehow an alpha proton does get removed, then you can get an intramolecular Claisen condensation, because realize we still have just an ester. But remember that the name for this intramolecular version is the Dieckmann condensation. Since we just had that mechanism, and it's identical to this, only difference being here that I think we have one extra carbon maybe. But let's then try to jump straight to the product. If I allow the carboxylic acid on the right to form the enolate, then recall that that carbonyl itself is not going to end up in the ring, because the reaction happens through the alpha position. So that's why I've circled the ones, the carbons here that I did, because we'll have the alpha group on the right that's going to be able to come back and attack the ketone on the left. If you look at that, that involves six carbons. So the product's going to be a six-membered ring. One carbonyl, the one that gets attacked, is in the ring itself. The other carbonyl is off of it. So that would be the product. Questions on this one? And we'll move to the next one. Fourth one, oh yes. Involves a type of compound that we hadn't seen yet. But that hopefully you could make some intelligent guesses of how it would react. So which reaction was this? It is a Michael addition. And I said one small phrase in lecture yesterday that has a number of people concerned. I want you to think through this before you start asking me, wait, you said there's no alpha proton, because I'm going to declare this is not an alpha proton. Now, yes, it is the alpha position of the carbonyl, so of course, in terms of nomenclature, it is an alpha proton. Is there any resonance that can stabilize the carbon ion that would be formed if you pulled off that hydrogen? Why not? Because carbonyl doesn't what? But isn't that the excuse we use to normally say the alpha hydrogen will come off? That because of resonance? That's the answer. The double bond that's there is already conjugated with the carbonyl. If you made an anion on the double bond, that lone pair is going to be pointing out an orbital that is sp2, yes, 90 degrees to the pi bond. If that lone pair is 90 degrees to the pi bond, and therefore also 90 degrees to carbonyl's pi bond, no resonance is going to occur. So that is not a favorable proton to be removed. So I'll say it this way. It's not a standard alpha proton, since although it is in the correct position, If it is removed, the resulting anion cannot be delocalized. Since the carbonyl is already conjugated with the carbon-carbon double bond. So, only the first compound is going to be able to be deprotonated, which this is similar to a situation as if we had two carbonyls. The carbon-nitrogen double or triple bond is able to delocalize a negative charge that forms at the alpha position. The carbonyl is also able to delocalize it. Nitriles are not quite as good as carbonyls at delocalizing because the nitrogen is not as electronegative as oxygen. But because we have two things that can then stabilize a negative charge, that makes the negative charge easier to form, which means that the compound is more acidic, which means the base that we're going to form by deprotonating is weaker and squishier, which means it wants to do conjugate addition, which is why this is a Michael addition. So due to resonance, with both the carbon-oxygen double bond and carbon-nitrogen triple bond, the anion formed by removing this alpha proton is less basic better said lower base strength and therefore more squishy. So it can undergo conjugate addition. Again, this hard, soft ion concept that the aldehyde here is conjugated, so it's squishy, that this is a delocalized, somewhat weak base by comparison, so it's also squishy. How would we write the mechanism? We make the enolate by deprotonating. I used methoxide here. I will, as I have sometimes, combine resonance with the deprotonation. Oh, there we go. So we've made the enolate, which is now going to react, and we've got, yes, conjugated aldehyde. So the carbonyl reforms. Carbon-carbon double bond attacks. Attacks the other double bond. Again, because it's this conjugate Michael addition. The carbon-carbon double bond will have to move as a response, and you could end up just opening it and putting the lone pair on the alpha position, but that can delocalize. And so to help show that effect, I'm going to go ahead and again incorporate resonance of the carbonyl into it. The compound that formed the enolate has its carbonyl reformed. We make a new carbon-carbon bond. between what are relative to that first carbonyl, the alpha and beta positions. There is then an enolate that we end up with, which that enolate is not thermodynamically stable. And if we allowed it to collapse and reform the carbonyl, that alpha position, if it wanted to, if it tried to attack the other carbonyl, that's going to make a four-membered ring, which is not favorable. So instead, if we had methoxide as the base, then means we have some methanol left over. And so when the carbonyl reforms, it could just end up getting protonated. Which gives us our product. And notice, because I don't think I'd pointed this out previously when we've been doing these syntheses, because the last time we did Michael was just the acid mechanism in lab. Relative to the carbonyl that was the enolate, notice that we formed a carbonyl at the delta position. So a delta keto aldehyde, or more generally, a delta carbonyl containing carbonyl compound is indicative of a Michael addition. So an aldehyde or ketone with a carbonyl at the delta position, again, is indicative of a Michael addition. Questions on this problem? Yeah?
Why was it more squishy?
Because it's a weaker base. The more conjugation we've got, the stronger the acid is, because the ion is more tolerated. But that means that the ion is not as basic, which is why its conjugate's acidic. And so that's more delocalized and a squishier ion, therefore.
But then, in the both base, like, some people, but if you have really strong base, then they're just going to go to direct addition. But if you have weak base, then it's going to go to conjugated addition.
Exactly what I said during the lab.
But then for the squishy part, isn't it like better nucleophile? So shouldn't it have the carbonyl?
But in this case, it's not what makes a good nucleophile versus a base. It's how the charge is distributed. So the carbonyl is a tighter type of charge difference. So if you had a strong base where that negative charge is more localized, then again, we're back to that small charge interaction like we drew in lab the other day. The fact that this is conjugated might have something to do with its nucleophilicity. But that's what matters in this case. Because we're not doing an SN2 here, we're just doing an addition. Any other questions? I think we got time for one or maybe both of the other problems. Now let's see, the next one. Oh, yes. Oh.
It's 12:20.
It is?
Yeah.
Wow, time went by fast. I guess we'll do these last two problems next time then.